Scanning. Identity authorized. Welcome to the Secret Superhero Club Podcast Network.
Hear you lead today and enter the world of Hilt Radio. We'll take you on an epic journey through the magic of all things Disney, Marvel, and Star Wars, from the movies to the box and everything in between. It's time to take you to Disney and beyond with your hosts, Brittany and Liam DeCosimo.
And Mommy too.
Welcome back to another episode of Hilt Radio, as we take you through all the latest and greatest from all things Star Wars, Disney, and Marvel. And in this particular episode, our 320th, we're actually going to be talking about Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, as well as a little bit of conversation on all of the other Spider-Man movies. And to do that is myself, your host, Liam.
I'm Brittany.
And we are, let me think here, with great podcast comes great responsibility.
Oh, Lord. He went there.
I really did.
Oh,
I really
missed
did.
I should have went, oh, Lord and Miller. Gosh.
You could have. It's too late now. So hopefully you guys have gone out and seen Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. If you have not, what is wrong with you? Definitely go out and see that movie. I would say hit pause, but maybe this will be a good incentive for you to go out and see it if you haven't seen it already. And for those that have seen it, I hope you guys are ready to dive in, have some really cool discussion on not just this movie, but as well as all the other Spider-Man movies. And really, how does this one rank? Is this the greatest Spider-Man movie of all time? Stick around, and you'll find out on this podcast.
Dun, dun, dun.
Nice. Now I need to go find that just so I can put that.
No, mine's better than anyone you'll find.
Oh, that's good, because that actually saves me a lot of time of not having
to go
on the interwebs and find
You're
that.
You're welcome.
So. Nice. Now I got to go on the interwebs.
Oh, my goodness. Stop trying to overdub me.
All right, perfect. So without further ado, T1, take us on in.
Yes, sir. Loading Fandemonium.
Man, we haven't done one of these in a while. For those that are not familiar, when we say Fandemonium, it's pretty much when we are talking about something that exists within our fandom, and that's going to be the focus of the episode. So for those new to the show, typically we do a news segment, which we talk about all the latest and greatest things that are happening on all the franchises that are underneath the Disney umbrella. So
yes.
Anything in Pixar, Star Wars, Disney, Marvel, I mean, anything along those lines, even Studio Ghibli, as we are big fans of that as well. But with this particular one, as obviously this is Marvel, or if you will, it's kind of Marvel adjacent because this is a Sony production. But this was, I mean, honestly, this is probably the first time I can remember going to see a Marvel animated movie
in theaters. Marvel animated.
I'm trying to think back. What would we have seen that was a Marvel animated film?
Other Marvel animated films.
Big Hero 6 is the only other one that I can think of.
If you count that one.
I mean, you have to. It's still Marvel.
I mean, it is Marvel, yes. But I don't think any Disney fan that is not a Marvel fan probably doesn't know that it's Marvel.
Right. For them, it's a Disney movie. It's not really like a Marvel movie.
Yes.
But yeah, that would be the last one. So you're thinking 2014 has been 4 years since the last like Marvel adaptation. Mm-hmm. And even with that one, Big Hero 6 was a fairly obscure group.
Yeah.
And obviously with that one, like they couldn't even use Silver Samurai, who is a pretty large character within the confines of their storyline, as well as Sunfire. So, I mean, having sort of like that Guardians of the Galaxy style obscure group that not a lot of people know of, this was kind of a deviation of that. Like here we're taking arguably the most well-known Marvel superhero of all time.
Yes.
And I mean, obviously the focus of this is Miles Morales, I don't know what Earth his character is, but in the comics, Miles Morales was introduced basically in his universe where Peter Parker, the original Spider-Man, dies, and Miles Morales takes up the mantle of Spider-Man, most typically identified in his black suit with red accents. So with this, I mean, we knew from the commercials and whatnot that we had seen way, way earlier this year, kind of giving that advert for this, we knew it was going to focus on Miles Morales. We knew we were going to get additional Spider-Man characters introduced, but it really wasn't until a couple of months ago that they really broke down, you know, that we were going to get Spider-Ham and Spider-Man Noir.
Peter Parker.
Right. Penny Parker. We got, obviously, Gwen Stacy's Ghost Spider, which I think that one we kind of knew earlier
yes.
on in the game that she was going to play a part. Or in her universe, she's Spider-Woman,
yes.
obviously, in nowadays most people refer to her as Ghost Spider. I've never heard
Spider-Gwen.
Spider-Gwen was what I always called her. I haven't heard of her referred to as White Widow, but apparently that's also another
in the comics.
Yes, so that's something we'll have to familiarize ourselves with. But with this movie kind of going into it, what were your expectations, if you will?
I didn't have any expectations. I'm just kidding. I knew it was going to be amazing.
Yeah.
It's Spider-Man. Spider-Man is my fave. So I kind of just went into it. If they're going to put it in theaters, it's got to be big. There's so many animated series that are on just Disney Channel alone.
Right.
And then when we think about the ones that were really old that were on, what were they? Fox?
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Right? So there's so many different animations or animated TV shows of Spider-Man. The fact that they finally decided, hey, we're going to make an animated theatrical version. You know it's going to be amazing, especially in the time that we're in with the MCU, with Sony's Spider-Man and
right.
Venom and everything else. Now Disney's. But Fox's, you know, superheroes, X-Men, whatnot. You knew it had to be big if they were going to try to do the first animation that is officially Marvel, I guess you can say.
Right.
That is not Marvel Big Hero 6. Yes.
Yeah,
they
yeah.
came out and said, hey, this is a Marvel animated movie.
Right.
Come and see it. And so far, so good, I guess, right? Did we talk numbers?
No. Okay. So with Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, against a budget of $90 million, it has already taken in $56.4 million. And that is literally just coming out of opening weekend. So,
Four days?
Yeah, I mean, to me, that's incredibly impressive, I think, just, you know, across the board. Prior to this even being released, pardon me, it had like 100% rating on Rotten Tomatoes. I think that has dropped down. I want to say it was maybe like a 97 or a 95 now.
It's not too bad.
No, which is still really, really good. Yeah, 97% is what it sits at right now. You know, with this one, it kind of seems universal. I really haven't had any interactions on social media where people were coming out saying that they didn't like it or they didn't think that it measured up to the height. It seemed for the most part everybody was raving about this movie. With these last couple of days, did that change your expectations going into it? Did it like make you more excited for the film or a little bit worried because you're like, well, maybe it's too hyped now and I'm going to go into it expecting too much?
No, I don't think for me, things don't ever really get too hyped. It would be kind of a downer on our part because we are the people who go out and we're like, hey, we're going to do this movie review. And we tend to enjoy most things that Disney puts out, which is what we tend to review.
Right.
I mean, this not being Disney, for the most part, we hype things up really big. And maybe for some that does kind of let a few people down. For me, that's never a thing because I'm still going to go in with my own expectations. Yes, it's going to get me more excited if other people are excited about it.
Right.
Like, oh, it's got to be great. You know, so many people are loving it. And there's very few times where, you know, things let me down in Disney's, you know, world, in Marvel's world, in the animated world. If people love it, more than likely, I'm going to love it. Now,
right.
when you're outside of that and there's other movies and it's kind of something that I wasn't even looking forward to and people hype up, we could talk about like Avatar or something like that, where it's like, oh, it was amazing. And I think in the like thick of it, it was. Now stepping back out of it, it's like, it was great for the time. But now right. going back, I don't care to watch it again.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Ever.
If I'm going to see Zoe Saldana, there are other movies I'd rather watch
I will watch her as anything else.
Yeah.
Thank you very much. And that being said, Avatar was great. It's just very hyped. For something like this, yes, I had higher expectations hearing that people were excited. And I mean, early on, I'm going to say they met him. So I'm glad that we got to go see this movie in theaters.
Agreed. And I was impressed, too, because this was something that for this being the first, I mean, other than the Spider-Man, the Ultimate Spider-Man cartoon, this is our first theatrical release of Miles Morales. You know, we had gotten rumors and word that there was the potential for him being introduced in the MCU, especially if there were concerns that Marvel didn't want to have to reboot Spider-Man mm-hmm. again so soon after the Andrew Garfield Amazing Spider-Man films. But I'm kind of glad that they did go with Tom Holland and just still keep it Peter Parker in the MCU.
Mm-hmm.
And now seeing Miles Morales in this regard kind of it gave people sort of a clean slate, right? You didn't really have to measure Miles up against a live action Miles or something else. I mean, obviously there's a bit of overlap. Like we do have Kingpin in yes. this movie, which obviously you will always measure that up against Vincent D'Onofrio's portrayal of the character in Daredevil. Netflix's Daredevil. If you go back to the Ben Affleck Daredevil, it's actual Michael Clark Duncan. Mm-hmm. So very different version, but still really good. Mm-hmm. But with this, it was kind of interesting for them to take the character and then still want to have them play with the other Spider-Mans, you know, to have Jake Johnson come in and voice, you know, Peter Parker from, you know, one of the dimensions. It kind of seems like that Peter Parker is more of like the 616, like our dimension, because we do see regular Coca-Cola on the signs, right?
Yes.
We do hear for, the other Peter Parker, blonde Peter Parker, if you will. So coyly voiced by the one and only Chris Pine, which now he finally gets to be another Chris in a Marvel film at this point, because he was, what's his name? Steve something from Wonder Woman. He was her love interest. But, you know, it's nice that he got to get in there as well. But you have them reference a bunch of things that had happened in, like, the Sam Raimi trilogy.
Right.
They even, you know, the upside down kiss, the finger point strut.
We don't talk about that.
We don't talk about that. And they even kind of adjacently reference the Tom Holland thing where it's the fairy rescue, where as opposed to the fairy being split in half, he's holding two different ferry boats.
Oh, yes. Over the bridge.
Yeah. So it's like, it's not actually the same sequence, but it's similar enough that I thought that was kind of, in his universe, that was his version of what happened. So,
right.
Obviously, with the strut, when he's walking down the street, you know, in Sam Raimi's, he's not in costume. In this one, he was in his Spider-Man costume.
Yeah, but we got what they were, you know, we got the nods.
Yeah,
they
weren't good references.
Trying to animate Tobey Maguire in the film and then be like, just kidding, this is what he looks like. But I love that they did touch on that. I love that within the first 5 minutes of the movie, his version is the Sam Raimi version of Spider-Man. And then we go on throughout the movie to see kind of everybody else's story, which I thought was a great way for them to, I guess, touch on everybody's plots.
Yeah.
Or, you know, backstory, origin story, whatever you want to call it. They're like, all right, let's start this again.
Yeah.
And, you know, then they started with Peter Parker from, like you said, our world, not from the Miles Morales world.
Yeah.
And then they go to Gwen Stacy, and then they go to Penny Parker, right?
Yeah, Penny Parker, Peter Porker, and then
Spider-Man Noir. Yeah.
But kind of like, I liked that they introduced all of that, but I loved the way they portrayed Miles Morales, right? Like that we still got the origin, you know, he gets the spider bite and, you know, his relationship with his father and his mother and with his uncle, who we've already seen Aaron Davis in Spider-Man Homecoming.
Right. So that's,
played by the one and only Donald Glover. Who was their pick to play Miles Morales if they were going to do a Miles Morales live action. So it's awesome that he gets to be Miles Morales' uncle. Mm-hmm. And he even references in Homecoming where he says, hey, I got a nephew that lives around here. You know, so even to have that,
there's
like
potential.
Yeah, there's always that potential for a crossover.
You never know how long these movies will go on for.
Yep. But I really loved the introduction of the character. I loved the way that he was portrayed. Let me look up the Shameik Moore. I think did a fantastic job voicing it. Sounds super young, like the way that he voiced the character.
Totally, because he's a little bit older, right?
Yes, I expected somebody a bit younger to be voicing actor.
Assumed a kid or assumed a teenager at that, but he is. I don't know how old he is.
He's 23.
Okay, so he's
relatively
still
young. But,
when it's the voice world, you're as young as you want to be.
This is true. So. No, I absolutely loved that. I thought that, for me, the way they introduced this character gets me hyped for the potential for a live action, but I'm actually really comfortable with them just continuing on with this character. So as much as we've already heard word of Into the Spider-Verse 2, which we've talked about on a previous episode of the show, I'm fine with them just doing Miles Morales stories right now, cinematically as well. It doesn't have to be straight to TV or anything like that. Like, you can do Miles Morales, and you can do the Peter Parker Spider-Man with Jake Johnson. You can do Spider-Gwen please do yes. Spider-Gwen. I would love to see more of her stories. Mm. How about for you? Are you more into the spin-offs that they've been talking about? Or are you more interested in seeing a sequel to this film, especially with the stinger? I don't know how into the weeds we want to get with spoilers, but there is a really cool stinger on this.
There's spoilers, so yeah. We're going to spoil it for you.
we'll talk about the stinger, but we'll give
you
guys a heads up.
We'll save it a little bit later.
Yeah, but does that get you more excited for more of this, or are you happy to kind of let this sit for a while before they start overloading us?
This is one thing that I'm ready for. Sequels. I don't know what it is. Maybe it's the fact that it is so heavy into the comics.
Yeah.
To where you're going to pick up a comic and you don't want it to stop. You right. know, you're ready to finish out the story, whether it's just a small arc or it's like a continue, you know, it's this is Ultimate Spider-Man. You know, right. we're going to just play out his story for hundreds of issues because that's what we do. I'm ready for this to keep going. I think it's brilliant that they started with animation because we talked about this off air where once we were done watching it, it was like, was it smart for them to go animated or should they have introduced Miles Morales as live action before they did this? Like, what is better? This. This was so smart because, like I was telling you, for those who don't know Spider-Man other than cinematically, they don't know Miles Morales is a Spider-Man in another, you know, right. universe. They don't know that. So I think it was smart for them to introduce it this way. So they're like, oh, well, obviously Miles Morales is Spider-Man. There's a whole animated movie about it that was a big deal in 2018. So they can touch back on this for facts and, you know, reference for if and when they ever do a live action Miles Morales. Now to say, do I want that? Heck yeah, I do.
Yeah.
After this, though, I would love to see more animated versions, but I think it leaves the door open to, in the future, even in the MCU, for Tom Holland to interact with Miles Morales, you know, his Spider-Man. I would flip if they ever do that, to where he comes in and somehow, I mean, heck, if we're going to get Fantastic Four, you know, involved eventually, they can do anything they want with multiverse and alternate universes, whatever they want to do. It is possible, and I want it to happen.
Well, and I think that you touched on it perfectly. Like, for them to have the quantum realm and time travel and multiverse and what, there is absolutely no reason that the MCU can't go in that direction. And I think based on the success so far of this film, people are along for that ride. People already understand time travel and alternate dimensions. Mm-hmm. I don't think this is a far cry for people anymore. I mean, hell, we grew up with Back to the Future. Yeah. Like, we know how alternate universes, we know how changing the time stream can affect the future. And, you know, I love those kind of stories. I think for me that gives the gravity to the smallest things that we do, you know, can create a ripple effect, right? Mm. That they can change who we are, who other people are. And I always think that that's fantastic, right? Like, you know, if I had been born a girl, like, you know, how different is that versus, you know, the life that I live now? If I hadn't pursued music and I pursued soccer, like, how different is my life going to be? You know, if you hadn't hit me up after I bugged you at the mall, right? Like, this podcast wouldn't even be happening.
I wasn't at the mall that day.
Yeah.
French. You would be a famous punk rock star.
Or I would be living in my mother's flooded basement. So, I mean, there's great to know that these stories can be so involved, so in-depth, and be so entertaining the way that they're done. And you touched on something else earlier in what you were saying with the fact that these are the types of movies that get people into comics.
Yes.
Right? Like, we always talk about, like, paper print being a dying form. Mm-hmm. Don't tell Dunder Mifflin. But there is, you know, there is something to be said about these movies being successful and introducing you to characters that then you have a vested interest in learning more about them. Because while you're waiting for these other stories, these other movies to come out, you want to know more about these characters. Like, even you were like, hey, what issue was Spider-Gwen introduced?
Right.
And I went and looked it up. I'm like, oh, it's Edge of Spider-Verse. And you're like, cool, add that to Marvel Limited. I want to watch it. So I was, you want to read it. So, you know, it gives us that incentive to go and read more about these characters, you know? So I really like that. I think that that's what keeps the art form going. That's what keeps people interested in looking into these comic books and, you know, hopefully the next generations to continue to want to learn more about these characters and not just take it at face value. Like, hey, this is just, this is a great visual medium, cinematically, but maybe not so much in print form. But one of the things I think this movie did so wonderfully was the homage to the comic form, right? Where if like he's falling down next to a building and he's going, ah, as he falls, or as yes. he's saying, no, no, no. And there's actually doing the, like the little word boxes that say no all over the screen.
Right.
As he's walking, it's changing panels. And I always think back to like the Ang Lee Hulk, where yes. they tried to do a lot of the phases and wipes and whatnot were done in comic panels.
I love that.
That's the that's honestly the only thing I liked about that movie is uh-huh. the fact that it really played into like, yeah, we know this comes from comic books. We know the people that are watching mm-hmm. this are probably comic book fans.
Right.
90% of you, 99% of you. And I think with this one, it did it maybe without being so heavy handed. Mm-hmm. It did it as almost like... Like a little nod, like a little wink and a nod, like, hey, comic fans, we know this is for you. Mm-hmm. So I really dug that, and I think that that will also read well for, like, the younger generation. Mm-hmm. There were certain shots, especially when Miles went with his uncle, with Aaron, down mm-hmm. into the subway when they went to do the when they went to get up in the subway. Mm-hmm. A lot of the scenes, like the changes, the shots, were all very much like comic panel. And I almost teared up at that mm-hmm. point because I was like, this is so wonderfully done. Like, the characters are so gripping. They're so dense. It's so masterfully executed. And then just cinematically, you could tell that they had a great respect for the art form.
Right.
And I think that that's what I want to see more of in movies. And honestly, if the spinoffs or the sequels play into that, you'll have me opening weekend every time.
Right. Then it goes to, like, you touched on the animation style and obviously it being very reminiscent of right off the pages. It is yeah. basically the comics, but that also goes to the animation itself, the specific character style that they went for. At first, for some people, I think we're a little like, we're choosing, this is very different. We're not used to this animation from any company.
Yeah.
Because they were trying to peel them right off of the pages, and they did, because comics have that, some comic artists have that style to where it's can be rough on the eyes depending yeah. on the artist, but for some that is what they prefer. This I think found like a nice balance between, I couldn't even tell you the artist's names, but I'm sure you could, to where, I don't know, just like the angular, you know, features of some of the characters. Like, think about Kingpin and his right. huge body and his like
little
big
tiny,
but little head
in the middle
of his body, so awkward looking. But if you're a comic fan, you appreciate that
right.
because it would be drawn just like that on the books. So I don't know. I really enjoy that they kind of just went the whole nine yards with this. They're like, hey, this is a comic book animated movie.
Right.
Let's just give them a comic book to read on screen.
Well, yeah, I mean, because they're obviously drawing influence from like Steve Ditko, right? One of the creators of Spider-Man. But like, there's a lot of John Romita Sr. and John Romita Jr. in there as well. So like, they're drawing a lot of influence from the artists that have played with Spider-Man for a long, long time.
Right.
And I think that that's what's important. There was even a one point in one of the universes that you see Romita Ramen as like a food place.
Was it?
As obviously a nice little homage to the Romitas. So I really liked that. I thought that was like little things like that were really cool.
The Easter eggs.
Yeah.
They had the Weekends comic in there.
Yeah.
And kind of everywhere in everybody's universe.
When Miles falls and he hits like the different signs and whatnot, and he lands on the ground, the number 4 and the number 2 from the side of the building
nice.
Fall next to him. And that was the spider that bit him.
Yes.
Was Experiment 42.
Right.
So I love like just little things like
and
that.
And when you go back to his Ultimate Spider-Man, his lottery number to get into his school is 42.
42? No way.
Yes.
That's so cool.
So just all the little touches.
The Stan Lee cameo might be my favorite cameo.
Yeah.
Not just because he, you know, obviously he's passed on, which I cried in the theater. Like
yep.
I was wiping away tears with my mm-hmm. with my shirt sleeves. And a very audible like, oh, like when he hit the screen, uh-huh. I was like, no, it's Stan.
Too soon.
It's
you're never ready for Stan cameos, and now that he has passed, you're never ready.
Well, yeah. Well, and they mean
it's
more.
Hard.
Like
yeah.
they mean even more now, you know, especially with this one being the first cameo after his passing. You know, I think that means you know, that mean that to me, I think that means a lot to have this. And, you know, they had the film dedicated not just to Steve Ditko, but to Stan Lee as well. But I loved that it was just Stan's collectibles. And he had more of a part mm-hmm. in this one, as opposed to just being like, here's a one liner and I'm out. Mm-hmm. Like, he had like a little bit of a role. And I dug that. I thought that was pretty, pretty impressive. And it was important. But I think that this is what, that's just one aspect of what this movie did so well. And you touched on it perfectly. With the animation of this, this took 180 animators,
moly.
Which is the largest that Sony Animation Group has ever had to do for any
on
particular
any
film.
Of their animated
any
films?
Of their films. So,
wow.
I mean, this to itself, that's already a pretty impressive
because Sony bit of trivia, is the company that does Transylvania, right?
Yeah, like Hotel. Yeah, Illumination. They do.
Illumination is Sony?
Yeah, isn't that still Sony?
I thought that was DreamWorks. Is that Sony?
Yeah, isn't Sony DreamWorks?
I have no freaking idea.
But yeah, like
I'm gonna look that up right now, guys.
Yeah, right.
You're yelling at me. I know, guys.
Somebody is.
I know.
D Geekster, our animation expert.
I know.
I think that's the thing is like when you look at the amount of people involved in making sure this film was not only made but made the right way. That was going to be put together in a
DreamWorks
way that
is Universal.
Oh, there you go. Then I was completely wrong.
I was like, I don't think so.
But.
Let's see.
But Sony did, you're right. Sony did do Hotel Transylvania, though.
Yes. And I'll look up a list of what else they did.
There you go. But yeah, no, I thought that was really, to me, I think that's really impressive. And I'm hoping that they keep to that. I mean, obviously, that's a lot of people that are on payroll. But I hope that they keep to that kind of dedication for any of the spinoffs or any of the sequels that they do. Because I would hate to have anything lose quality. And what was really interesting as well is this movie was actually initially part of that Sony hack that had happened back in like 2014. So that there was already emails going back and forth talking about doing a Miles Morales helmed Spider-Verse film. So this is something that has been in the pipeline for a couple of years now. And this was something that Phil Lord and Chris Miller worked on. So the same duo that gave us the Lego movie, they were the same ones that at least started to give us Han Solo a Star Wars story. So
Sony Animation would be Cloudy with a Chance of Meatballs.
Oh, okay, there you go.
And then, yes, the Hotel Transylvania
series
there. They did, let's see, the Smurfs, the Emoji Movie,
okay.
The yeah. Star, and they worked on things like Peter Rabbit and Goosebumps. So some of the live action, also animated
nice.
Stuff. So, yeah. And then their most recent would be, obviously, Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So it is different than Illumination and DreamWorks. But nice. Illumination is under Universal along with DreamWorks.
Nice. So I want to get into the cast a little bit on this one. So as we had referenced before with Shameik Moore as Miles Morales and then as Jake Johnson as Peter B. Parker. Obviously, we also had Hailee Steinfeld as Gwen Stacy, who you guys will see in the upcoming movie Bumblebee,
ooh,
which is very cool. Mahershala Ali was Aaron Davis, who hopefully you guys have all seen the Netflix series, but he was
Luke Cage.
Yeah, he was in Luke Cage as Cottonmouth.
Yes.
There you go. So it was awesome to have him return to the Marvel Universe. Brian Tyree Henry was Jefferson Davis Morales, who is Miles' father. We had Lily Tomlin, which you and I are
so
big,
excited.
Grace and Frankie. She's Frankie in that one, but she plays actually May Parker, and she was so good.
Yes.
Just as
when
soon
you
as,
said it, and I was like, oh, how did I not get that?
You know, as soon as she started talking, I was like, oh, God, who is this?
Mm-hmm.
And I could like picture in my head, but I was like, oh, what's her name? What's her name? So, no, she was fantastic. Lua Lauren Velez was Rio Morales, Miles' mother. Zoe Kravitz actually was the voice of Mary Jane Watson. John Mulaney, that one also took us a little while to be able to pinpoint, but he was Peter Porker.
Beautiful.
And this was actually his first theatrical live action that he's done. Like, he has done obviously TV shows. He does that Big Mouth TV show or whatever, and he's done stand up and whatnot, but I think this is the first time it's animated voiceover, so that was cool for
very
him.
Cool.
Kimiko Glenn as Penny Parker, and then surprisingly enough, Nicolas Cage as Spider-Noir. So this was a surprise? I mean, obviously we knew Spider-Noir was going to be in there, but I didn't know Nick Cage was
going to
be in it.
I feel like we knew Nick Cage was going to be in it. We didn't know who he was going to be, though.
See, but it was interesting because earlier this year we saw Teen Titans Go to the Movies, and he played Superman, which was an homage to he was supposed to be in the Tim Burton Superman movie. It was going to be Nick Cage as Superman.
Oh.
So that's why they had him voice Superman. So it had that, you know, it had a kind of nod to that.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas with this one, it was just, you know, he's supposed to be based from a 1930s monochromatic black and white universe. And that Nicolas Cage actually based the character on like Humphrey Bogart and James Cagney and Edward G. Robinson. So I thought that was really, it was a very, a smart decision. And we also had Catherine Hahn as Olivia Octavius, which is in this universe, it's a female version of Doc Ock. And then Liev Schreiber was Wilson Fisk, also Kingpin, who Liev Schreiber has previously portrayed Sabretooth in the Wolverine Origins movie opposite the one and only Hugh Jackman. So yeah, I thought they really did a great job picking the cast with this part. Sorry guys, this is going to be a little bit of a spoiler, I guess. But 5, 4, 3, 2, 1 in the stinger at the end of the film. So definitely stick around. You actually
all the way to the end,
all the way to the end. You actually get to see, Spider-Man 2099, in a post-credit scene. So this is Miguel O'Hara, and he actually talks about going back to the beginning. So, his AI basically gives him a wristband that's going to allow him to time travel. So he time travels back to the 1967 Spider-Man cartoon.
Yep.
He
did that.
Which was really awesome because they actually got this same actor that voiced Spider-Man in the cartoon to voice it in this little sequence where basically they're just having a fun little back and forth.
Oh, amazing.
So I thought that was really, really cool. But what was really interesting about that was Miguel O'Hara was voiced by the one and only Oscar Isaac.
So cool.
So I kind of feel like if you're going to have Oscar Isaac, like there's a reason behind it. So like why wouldn't he play a larger part going forward? Because I mean, a lot of 2099's characterization stems from the alternate universe and whatnot. So I'm excited for the potential of that. And obviously I would hope that they would keep Oscar involved.
Well and they had, I guess, the stinger before the stinger at the end of the film where, you know, before it completely ends and Miles is relaxing on his bed, he's singing a little song. Gwen is talking to him.
Yeah.
So it's like, well, obviously going forward, they're going to figure out a way that they can travel to each other's, you know, universes.
Or at least be able to communicate.
Somehow.
Yeah.
So maybe that plays a part into it. So I'm kind of hoping that that's the direction it goes in. And it would be pretty cool if Oscar Isaacs does get to stick with this character, and that will be, what's his name? Miguel?
Yeah, it's Miguel O'Hara. I always thought it was super funny because it's like Spanish first name and Irish last name. So
interesting.
You know, he's like a little Remy, if you will. So I really dug that. I think it was also kind of interesting because when you think about it, even though it's not really, he just doesn't really say much, but we did finally get J. Jonah Jameson since we haven't gotten him in.
Mm-hmm.
Man, we didn't get him in either of the Andrew Garfield Spider-Mans, and definitely didn't get him in Homecoming. So we haven't had J. Jonah Jameson in a Spider-Man movie since Spider-Man 3.
Are you sure?
Yeah.
Huh. Are you sure he wasn't in the Andrew Garfield ones?
I'm almost positive he wasn't in the Andrew Garfield ones, because there's never a point where Andrew Garfield's
working at the Bugle. We didn't get that far.
No, we didn't. I'm sure that was lined up for the third one. That was never going to happen. I love that. Oh, it was, Cliff Robertson. This is another cool little bit of trivia, but Cliff Robertson, who played Uncle Ben in the original Sam Raimi Spider-Man trilogy, the phrase "with great power comes great responsibility" was actually pulled from that movie since Robertson passed away in 2011.
Oh.
So they actually pulled that and used that same audio for this
movie.
That's
awesome. So
that was another little thing that I found that I thought was really, really interesting. But to me, it still stems from all that. Is like, these are the things that they put into really making this movie above and beyond, I think, what anybody was expecting.
Mm-hmm.
So now I want to get into the meat and potatoes of this.
That wasn't the meat and potatoes?
Yeah, sorry. But how does this film stack up against the other Spider-Man movies?
I don't know. It's kind of tough because it it is the only animated one. So right. It kind of is on its own pedestal no matter what. It's going to be the best at what it is, compared to animated TV series.
Right.
I would take this one for sure.
But when you think about like the core things of like a comic book adaptation, right?
Yes.
Does it do anything with the character that maybe isn't new, but is entertaining in this medium, right? Like, it doesn't feel like it's just rehashed right off the page. Was the action enjoyable?
Mm-hmm.
Did the storyline feel new and exciting, or was it something that we'd seen 1,000 times before? And especially in an instance like this, where you have multiple characters, did each character feel necessary to the plot? So when you like take those kind of things in consideration, and I'll throw it back to some of the complaints I've had with prior Spider-Man movies. So when you think of Andrew Garfield's Amazing Spider-Man 2,
mm-hmm.
the biggest complaint I've had with that movie is the overabundance of villains that serve nothing to the plot.
Okay.
And similar to maybe even Spider-Man 3, right? Where we had Sandman, we had Green Goblin 2, and we had Venom.
Mm-hmm.
And it just felt like sort of an overabundance of opponents. It didn't, one of the things I loved about Spider-Man 2 was just they did so much with Doc Ock that it really felt like that was enough. That's all Peter really
right.
needed to face off against. And I think they fell into like the Batman, Batman and Robin motif, where it was like, let's just throw a lot of villains on screen, even if none of them are really have any substance.
Mm-hmm.
So when you think about that, that type of a balance versus what we've seen from Homecoming, from the Amazing Spider-Mans, and then from the Sam Raimi Spider-Man, how would you stack that up?
Well, I think that's kind of a comic thing to do, though, is you do put in, villains that are not always as necessary as Kingpin would be to the story.
Right.
As Liv is in this story and as Prowler is. So you have your main three villains right there. One of them's kind of all three villains.
Yeah, I'd say all three are villains. You had Silvermane as well. Like, he didn't do that much.
But big was he? How necessary was he?
Right.
He was just a henchman. That's kind of all he needed to be.
Well, he's a henchman. Scorpion was
a henchman
as well. Yeah.
I mean, even though super spoilers right now.
So, but when you think about that, right? So to that exact degree, so you've got all of these villains, but then they've also introduced a bunch of heroes. So if it was the six Spider-Men women all fighting just Kingpin, it feels bizarrely uneven
right.
in the way that you
it's
you
like how strong
categorize
is
that.
Kingpin. I mean, I know he's a big dude, but
right.
come on.
But especially if you're gonna have the showdown between Kingpin and Miles, it doesn't feel right if you're like, oh well, it's just Kingpin versus six people and now it's Kingpin versus one. It's like, no, you wouldn't want that.
Right.
It needs to feel like there's a good balance. So did you feel that worked?
Yes. I think it did work. I think all of those villains on screen were necessary. Like we said, sometimes you do need just a henchman. You
right.
know, you need extras, somebody for Peter Porker to take out, you know,
right.
and for the huge story with Penny Parker,
yeah,
you know,
and her
losing her robot. Like, that was super sad. And it was a character we met for just, minutes of the movie. It doesn't have has a decent role, but not like a big role. It's not a Miles Morales or Peter Parker role or even Gwen Stacy, but you still care about this girl and her robot. And it's like, well, now I just want more of her version of, of Spider-Man. Is that a thing? I didn't even know that was a Spider-Man. Is that made for this movie, or is that really a thing?
No, that's really a thing.
I had no freaking idea.
Yeah, Penny Parker. Yeah.
That is so cool. So I need this anime-style Spider-Man, Penny Spider-Girl / robot thing in my life.
Well, to touch on that as well is like when you think about the villains that are more of just the henchmen, right? Where it's not just a bunch of faceless, nameless people that are just running around getting their butt kicked, right? I liked that. I thought this movie played that really well in the same way that Homecoming played it really well, where you've got Vulture, right? Which is your main villain. You had...
You did get Scorpion.
You got Scorpion to some degree.
You
got Phineas Mason, the Tinkerer. You got Prowler to some degree. You got the... Herman's version of the Shocker, and then you also had Montana, which was a weird version of also the Shocker before he gets disintegrated. So you had like the henchmen
right.
leading into, but Vulture was your main villain, and I thought we kind of had this balance with this as well. Is I think you've got Kingpin is your main, and I'd say Doc Ock is sort of your sub-villain, and then Prowler's kind of the sub before them, and then, you know, below that you've got Scorpion and Silvermane.
Right.
You know, not quite as critical. So I really dug that they had that kind of balance, and I don't think that they had as much balance when you get back to, like, the Andrew Garfield
there
one.
There you go.
Or when you go back to the Sam Raimi one.
So even though they had probably just as many villains in that film that were mentioned, but it was they were unnecessary.
Right.
There was no purpose for them to, you know, really be in this film other than the setup for what was to come in the next film.
And you never got the advantage of introducing villains like in Amazing Spider-Man 2 and then having them all fight Spider-Man simultaneously. Right? You had, it's like, here's Rhino. All right, now Rhino's gone. Oh, here's Electro. Yeah, Electro's gone. Oh, here's Green Goblin 2. And that's it.
And that's the main villain.
Oh, and apparently. Here's Rhino again. Awesome. Thanks, guys. Mm-hmm. Like, I would have liked to have seen that team up and Spider-Man's trying to fight three villains or, you know, trying to figure out how is he going to balance
this.
So I would have dug that. I would have liked that there was a little bit more.
Because that seems more real.
Yeah, you know, that's what you would see.
That's what would happen.
Yeah. So I don't know. So you said this is difficult, right, to kind of rank this. But does this rank higher than certain trilogies?
So,
would you put this on an even keel with
now,
one
when
of
you're,
them?
So when you're thinking of a comic book adaptation in film, this is perfect.
Yeah.
Because it is as literal as a comic can be, like slapped on the screen and you're watching it. It's right. A moving comic book. How amazing is that? And I think that that's why it makes it, I don't know if I can say the best, because once again, it's so different, live action to animation.
And there's recency bias. We just watched this
movie. Watched it, yes. So I would say for what it is, if comic book lovers ever wanted a comic book thrown on the screen, this is probably the best out of all comic book adaptations from Marvel, from DC, from Watchmen?
DC.
Is also DC
as well.
Okay.
Yeah.
I always forget that because it's so good.
Well, it was Charleston Comics first, and then those characters were purchased by DC.
Because that's pretty high up there in my, you know, regard of comics adaptation as well.
Yeah. Well, because Watchmen was Zack Snyder's spot on frame by frame adaptation of the book.
And that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, yeah.
So when you're thinking live action to
animation. And I don't
animation,
mean that as an insult. That was phenomenally done.
No,
I still
it's amazing.
Love Watchmen. Yeah.
Watch that every day. I think it's tops.
Yeah.
I don't know. I don't know if I could say it's number one.
If you're going to tell somebody that was like, hey, I really want to watch a Marvel movie. Like, I'm trying to get into comic books, but what movie should I watch to get me into comic books? And you said, hey, but what character do you think you're interested in seeing? They go, well, I think I'd like Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
Which Spider-Man movie do you tell them to go see?
Either this one or Homecoming.
Yeah?
Mm-hmm.
So if you're going to rank them, right?
Oh, you.
Okay. But I want you to think about it right now. I have some other topics I want to cover first, but I want you to start thinking about ranking, right?
Okay.
So start thinking that in your head. So a couple of the other things I really want to touch on in this film was, one, I'm a huge, huge sucker for like father-son storylines.
Mm-hmm. And I wonder why.
Gosh, I can't even imagine why. But with the Peter Parker typical storylines, his parents are gone, right? So it's just Ben Parker and Aunt May. His uncle passed, you know, obviously is murdered, and then he, you know, this is, he becomes Spider-Man, and part of his coping mechanism is to feel like he is constantly trying to live with this guilt over Ben Parker's death. With Miles Morales, he has both his parents, right? Like, he has Jeff and he has Rio, and I think that it was super important to play to that dynamic, the dynamic between him and his father. I would have probably liked to see a little bit more with him and his mother, but I understood, like, there's only so much that you can pack into this movie because there was a lot.
Because he needed a relationship with his uncle.
Yes,
you know?
Yes. And that tied in perfectly to the father, right? Is that you have this, you have this dichotomy between Aaron and Jeff where Jeff is the straight and narrow, the police officer, and Aaron is a criminal.
Mm-hmm.
And then, you know, Miles, obviously having lived under his father's thumb, if you will, but wanting to break free, wanting to be out there in the world and viewing his uncle as his hero, like, oh, look at the freedom that you have. Look at all the fun that you get to do. And, oh, you're going to take me and go do graffiti. This is awesome. Like, to have that type of person that you kind of look up to. I thought the dynamic that they played for all of those characters was so perfectly done. And I definitely teared up with the, you know, him going to the dorm room, and obviously Miles is all roped up, webbed up. But the speech that he gives,
yes,
like, I could just imagine myself giving that speech to Remy one day, you know, where it's just like, look, I know we're not always going to see eye to eye, we're not always going to get along, but I need you to know that the reason I push you is because I want the best for you. Mm-hmm. And it's like, what kid would want to hear that from their father?
Right?
What
That's,
father doesn't want to say that to their kid?
I think what all kids need to hear.
Or mothers as well. I'm sorry, I don't mean to say just fathers. Mothers want to say this to their children as well. Like, there's, and I think
that, parents, yeah, I guardians, think, whatever.
I think that gave such a large degree of humanity, which I think this movie did great with, you know, I think especially with Peter, with the Jake Johnson Peter, him speaking to, like, the divorce that he goes through and getting out of shape, and, you know, but being more real. Like, that's, we're so used to superheroes just being these super buff people, but, like, here's a scrawny teenager that doesn't know how to use his powers. Hell, he doesn't even know what all of his powers are.
Yeah.
And then here's somebody that's been living with their powers forever, who is like a Mr. Miyagi type character, but is terrible at being Mr. Miyagi. Like, he doesn't even know the basics of it, and is literally just like, no, just keep doing it until you get it right. Like, that's not coaching.
Well, and then to go to the end of the film is also learning from Miles.
You know,
he takes into his own universe, like, I need to figure it out, get my life back together, and I can do it as
He's become a better person.
Yes.
Right?
Work it out with MJ.
Yeah.
And I imagine he did.
Right? Well, and I thought that they did phenomenal with that. So the relationships that they fostered, that they built, I thought all of that was done exceptionally well. I loved the friendship slash, like, slight crush a little bit between Gwen and and Miles. I thought that was really cute. That was well executed.
The fact that he taught her something also, I think that's kind of what the takeaway was, right?
Yeah.
With the mains being Peter Parker and Gwen Stacy, I would say. Because, you know, Spider-Man Noir and Peter Porker and all those, they're just kind of the add-on Spider-Man. They definitely serve their purpose, but we weren't going to get in-depth storylines with them.
We got a lot of good jokes.
That's what they're there for.
A lot of good conversations, and it felt like it was more of a group, like, oh, Miles isn't ready yet, as opposed to just Gwen or just Peter saying he's not ready.
Right. So when you have, you know, Gwen, we already talked about him teaching Peter Parker, you know, something to take back to his universe, but then also to give Gwen something to take back, because in her universe, she loses Peter Parker.
Yeah.
She loses her best friend. So she doesn't do friends anymore.
Yeah.
And the fact that he taught her that, no, you can open that door again and it's okay. It's not always going to be that same story for you. And, you know, she shook his hand and was like, we're going to be friends. And that was a huge life lesson for her as well. So I think it was cool that in such a small part, you know, we're supposed to find the Miles Morales plot and his story and what's his takeaway. But the fact that we also got these other, you know, Gwen Stacy, and we also got Peter Parker's, you know, we're going to learn some life lessons here. I thought that was pretty great for them to fit into a, I don't know, 2-hour movie. I don't know how long it was.
Yeah.
2.5 hours, 2 hours?
No, I don't think it was 2.5.
An hour and 40 minutes?
It wasn't, it was long without feeling long. Hour or 117, so just shy of two.
Okay.
But so yeah, no, I'm with you on that one. I thought the relationships were well constructed and had a good amount of meaning. The other thing that I thought was fantastically done in this was the music.
Yeah.
So we got in the car, and you have your little iTunes subscription. I immediately wanted to listen to the soundtrack after watching this movie. And I don't think it's just because Miles Morales is, you know, a Latino African American child. I think that the way the music added to what was happening on screen, it kind of gave you, it almost made me want to be listening to music while listening, while reading comics, because I think it adds an extra dimension that you're not, that you don't normally think of when reading these things. And, you know, like, we've had the cinematic scores for the MCU movies. We've had the fun soundtracks, like, with Guardians of the Galaxy. Heck, even Spider-Man Homecoming had, you know, like, the Ramones in the soundtrack.
Right.
Like, there have been good songs that have been placed into these films, but this soundtrack, like, top to bottom, was aurally so well constructed, and it added to every single part of this film, whether he's walking down the street, whether he's fighting, whether he's trying to calm himself down yeah. so he could figure out how to release his spider grip. Right. Like, any of those things I thought were well executed. And I think that it speaks volumes to the minds behind this mm-hmm. that they were able to put that in without having it feel shoehorned.
Right.
That everything felt natural and organic to what the film already was.
Agreed. I think the music moves the movie along yes. just as much as the plot does on its own. So it kind of needed to be there. It is that background noise where it isn't just background noise because you do pay attention to it when it immediately goes on and you're like, I'm finding myself grooving to this, you know, soundtrack in theaters. Well, you know, I'm watching a movie, but yet I'm dancing because you can't help but, I don't know, nod your head to Biggie Smalls.
Yeah.
Because,
yeah.
come on now, who doesn't? That's, you're crazy if you don't. But the places that they put it, you know, his relaxing song, you know, where he's trying to sing the song and he doesn't know all the words, but he's singing them anyway, because what kid doesn't do that?
Right.
Heck, I still do that because I don't ever remember song lyrics past the first three words. And I just think it was so real to a teenager as it is to just anybody who's enjoys great music. So yes, front to back, top to bottom, the minute this movie started, I was like, the music is going to be the best part of this damn movie.
Nah. Yep.
So good.
Yep. Nice. Anything else you wanted to talk about for the movie itself?
Oh, I don't know. I'm sure there's something we're missing. We talked plot a little bit.
We talked characters. We talked animation. We talked music.
Voiceover. Yep. We
talked some of the story arcs.
Anything you would change?
I don't think so. I don't think there's anything that I would particularly want to alter with this movie. Mm-hmm. At first, I was a little jarred by Kingpin's rendition, but the mm-hmm. more it went on, the more I was like, no, that totally works.
Because it would be in a comic book.
Yep.
It's not natural. Comic books aren't natural.
Right. And I loved like Peter Porker's nose openings blinked the same way that his yes, eyes would.
I thought that was so silly.
And it would do like expressions. I thought that was super funny. But I liked that.
And his basically being Porky Pig.
Yes.
You know? Oh, yeah. That's all, folks.
Love that.
Can we even legally say that?
Can you even say that legally? So I loved those aspects of it. And I think, this was something else that was fun. So the little backstory real quick. So earlier today, before going to the movie, Remy had to go get a flu shot. So he doesn't really like what he calls pokies, but we told him we'd never lie to him, right? So if we know we're taking him to get a shot, we own up to it. We're not trying to hide it and then surprise him last minute. So he owned up to it, but we did tell him that we would let him pick out a toy. So without having seen this movie yet, Remy, what toys did you get today? What were your two toys?
Who is that? Do you remember her name? Spider. Ghost Spider.
And who else did you get? Who was your other action figure today?
He's running to go find his other action figure dramatically running because that is how we do it in this family.
Right. Yeah. Nothing we do
added
is
for dramatics. It's what we do.
I hear the pitter patter of Remy feet.
Miles Morales. Which one's your fave? Both, huh? Oh, Gwen Stacy. Oh, both. It was Gwen Stacy for a second.
Yeah. So there's a little Marvel Legends chew pack that has Miles Morales and Spider-Gwen from Into the Spider-Verse. And we showed him multiple other toys because this was not a cheap toy.
No.
And we could not sway him. He had it in his head. This is exactly what he wanted. Then when we asked him if he wanted to go see the movie, he was all on for it. But then fell asleep maybe, 10 minutes in?
Mm-hmm.
So I let him sleep for probably.
No, he told us he was going to go see the movie. He said, I wanted a toy and I want to see the movie.
Yeah, so he was ready.
He also said he wanted two toys, but we drew the line at one toy.
Hey, there's two toys in the one toy
and
package.
And we wanted to see the movie as well, so we're like, sure, you can go see the movie,
Why
kid.
Why not? And I had a work function recently that I got two tickets, so we really only had to pay for Remy. It was great. But he was all ready for this one, so obviously we had to take him. And I mean, he fell asleep for a little bit, but I really
that was
didn't,
from a long day.
Yeah, and early morning as well.
Right.
But he usually naps after getting a shot anyways. So.
Yes. So he woke up and wasn't angry. And usually, you know, when you wake up, when you're getting woken up from a nap that is not long enough, you tend to get angry, especially when you're an almost 4-year-old. He woke up and was like, Spider-Man's on the screen. I'm in.
Yeah, 100%
so
dialed in.
So definitely kid film. What is it, PG-13?
Oh, this one may be just PG.
That'd be awesome if it was just PG. I don't know. I feel like there was some language in there that might have been. But I could be wrong.
Anything too bad.
If nothing too bad. If this, you know, if you're worried on violence, mild animated violence. Oh, yeah. Violence.
Well, it's comic book style violence. Yeah, I mean, it's not anything that's too egregious. You know?
I definitely think it's worth it if your kid is a Spider-Man fan. Definitely take your kids. They will enjoy it just as much as you. And if maybe you're not a comic book fan or a Spider-Man fan, I think you would enjoy this, you know, rendition of a Spider-Man movie. So
nice.
Give it a shot. I think it's worth it. It's the holidays. If you're not going to go see Mary Poppins or what are the other holiday movies out right now? Is Bumblebee coming out for the holidays?
Yeah, Bumblebee will be coming out. Aquaman will be coming out.
Oh, okay. So if any of those movies do not tickle your fancy, then this one is definitely worth it.
Also, if our raving review of this movie is not enough, Tom Holland praised the film as, quote unquote, one of the coolest films that he's ever seen.
That's awesome.
That's very, very cool. Cool. All right. We'll take a real quick break and we're going to come back with our rankings here.
Cool.
All right. Fire when ready.
All right. Perfect. We haven't done a fire when ready in a while. And typically it's when we ask a question and then we have to go back and forth. But this time the question is, how would you rank the Spider-Man in all of the films cinematically that at least have happened since the 2000s? I'm not including any of those weird ones that came out like a long time ago.
And it is a fire when ready because I had no idea you were gonna make me do this.
This is true.
Thank you very much, Liam.
Oh, I'm prepared. So perfect. So out of the seven films, obviously we've got the Sam Raimi trilogy, the Mark Webb duology, right? Because there's two. And then we've got the John Watts directed Spider-Man Homecoming, and then obviously the most recent Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse. So, okay, so how would you, what is your number seven? We'll start with number seven.
Probably Amazing Spider-Man 2.
I have exactly the same. And I think it's for the reasons we specified earlier. It's like it doesn't really feel well thought out. The villains don't work together. Like, it doesn't make sense that these villains were all placed there.
It's kind of a bummer because the more I look back, and when you have so many other movies to now rank them up against each other, which sucks because you can still enjoy them for what they are separately, but when you are putting them, you know, next to, you know, the other adaptations of the same character, it, when I look back at the Amazing Spider-Man movies, I'm just don't care I did, and I loved them watching them, and I think I enjoyed them way more. I know I enjoyed them more than you did, and I know I enjoyed them probably more than a lot of people on the internet did, but now when I look back, I still enjoy them, but I would not choose to watch them out of the Spider-Man movies.
Remy went to put one of them on like a couple weeks ago, a month ago or so, and I legitimately was like not looking forward to watching
it. I feel like they feel more dramatic. They feel more melodrama.
They're not
fun. Yeah, well, they're good. They're just not. They're just more on the downer side.
Yeah, this is true.
So that's why my number six is Amazing Spider-Man.
Oh, wow. So I had Spider-Man 3.
I knew you were going to do that.
Because the finger pointing sequence is painful. And
but
as much as I was gonna put Amazing Spider-Man as number six, the same issues I have with Amazing Spider-Man 2, it was what happened with Spider-Man 3. The villains don't seem to work in conjunction with one another. None of it makes sense, and Topher Grace is an absolute
terrible
Venom. I can't think of the actor that plays Sandman's name, but he was great. I thought that he looked the part.
Oh.
He acted well. I dug him.
What is his name?
James Franco just feels like a simulacrum of himself. Like, it doesn't feel like an like he's actually James Franco. Just very,
are you making
very
up words
odd
right now? No, I'm just kidding. Go ahead.
Yeah, right. Number five.
Number five, Spider-Man 3.
Oh, there you go.
So I just flipped them. Ours same were flip-flopped. Yeah. All the same reasons. But as corny as those finger points are and the really super corny emo Spider-Man can get, I don't know why I will still take the corniness and fun, I guess what he was trying to go for in Spider-Man 3, than what
we got
in Amazing Spider-Man.
Gotcha.
I like fun.
Yeah, so you'd rank the Mark Webb duology as your bottom. Gotcha. Yeah. So what do you have for four?
This one is kind of tough because I don't know which one I liked more, but this one, because I will go with that nostalgia of what Spider-Man gave me being entered into, I guess, the movie universe. For me, Spider-Man 2 is number four.
Same here.
Oh, okay.
So I liked it. I thought that it was a great continuation of the story from what we got with the first Sam Raimi Spider-Man film. Doc Ock, as I said before, was a great villain. And it did continue the story with Peter Parker. It loses its way a little bit with the whole like J. Jonah Jameson Jr. and MJ thing going on. But I mean, whatever, it is what it is. I kind of thought that that would have been a better way. Oh, wait, was that, or was that the third one?
You're thinking of Doc Ock?
Yeah. No, with Doc Ock, they never mind. They didn't do the J. Jonah Jameson thing. That was the third one because that's how the symbiote comes down, right?
Are you thinking of what's her face?
Yeah, Mary Jane. I might be mixing up parts of the two of them. But yeah, so anyways, that's where I was.
You're throwing me off now.
Right? Spider-Man 1. For number 3.
For number 3, yes, Spider-Man 1. And that goes, I like that one more than the second one, just because it was the original, I guess you can say. I enjoy Sam Raimi's...
style.
Style, direction?
Yeah. His directorial style.
Yeah, his directorial style, because when you think about scenes where, like, I can go back to Spider-Man 2, where you're the movement of Doc Ock and his arms and like the silliness of seeing where the arm is going or where it's coming to.
Yeah,
that was it is kind of silly when you're thinking about it, but it's like, no, you want that. You want to feel like you're inside the film without having to watch a 3D movie. And I think Sam Raimi is great at doing that in a lot of his movies.
Well, yeah, you watch Army of Darkness, yes, or Evil Dead, and it's that exactly is, done the yes, same way.
It is.
Nice. So, yeah, so I also had Spider-Man 1 as my number 3. Same reasons you gave. And as much as I love Alfred Molina, and I thought he did a phenomenal job as Doc Ock, Willem Dafoe as Green Goblin is quintessential. Like, as much as at the time I thought Tobey Maguire was a good pick for Spider-Man, Willem Dafoe killed it as Green Goblin. He's over the top, exactly the way that you want him to be. The conversations that he's having with himself, I love it. Absolutely all of it was so well done.
Yeah, Willem Dafoe is amazing. And then to go back and totally be super silly to say this, but I had the biggest crush, not on Tobey Maguire, but on Spider-Man.
Yeah.
Like, Spider-Man in the Spidey suit was probably my biggest crush of my teen years, other than Anakin Skywalker.
and his quips are so good. I think in that movie, like the little zingers that he has are just so well done.
So I loved Tobey Maguire as Spider-Man in the Spidey suit, even outside, but more so in the Spider-Man. Spidey suit, because I think he did a great job. And if, you know, that was, I don't know, like, stunt doubles and like how often he was in the film, but if that was him the whole time, you are a pretty sexy Spider-Man, Tobey Maguire.
You see this, the shot where it's like Kirsten Dunst is holding on to Spider-Man, and it is obviously a mannequin, and they're swinging, but her hair is blowing the opposite direction of where of the direction that they're swinging.
No.
I'll have to show it to you. It's super funny.
Goodness.
This will be the big question, right? So number 2, what do you have for number 2?
I can't do it. I don't know. I can't.
Is it hard because of the recency bias?
It is. It is recency. It has to do with recency, but it also has to... I don't freaking know.
So here, you want me to go?
Sure, you can go.
Okay, so I have Spider-Man Homecoming as number 2.
Okay.
And this is the reason why. I think Spider-Man Homecoming is a great movie. It was my favorite Spider-Man movie out of all... I mean, it is my favorite live-action Spider-Man movie. I'll put it that way. And it probably will be for a very, very long time. But that movie benefits from the other instances we've seen that Spider-Man.
Mm-hmm.
So I love Homecoming, but I loved it. I loved him probably in even Civil more War. In Civil War. Like, even though it was only like a little 20 minute segment.
And now having him Infinity War.
Yeah, having him Infinity War, and he was great. Like, especially with the whole send him home Friday. Oh, come on! Like,
yeah,
little things like that, or, you know, the kid's seen more movies than you have. And, you know, like, like all of those little things, I think that's where that character benefits. He benefits from being able to play in this much larger sandbox. Whereas with this move, with Into the Spider-Verse, it is very, I mean, it's not very contained because obviously they got to go into all these different multiverses, but they did it in a way that they didn't need other movies to explain this one movie. Homecoming does rely on having these other movies to set up.
Okay.
I mean, the very beginning of the film is Adrian Toomes cleaning up the mess from Avengers.
Like, right.
It relies a lot on you knowing the rest of the MCU, whereas this movie, you need to know nothing else. You don't even need to know Spider-Man. They will tell you everything about not just Spider-Man, but every other iteration of Spider-Man. Mm. So I that's why I would say, and I know some of this is going to be recency bias. Maybe my opinion will change in a little while.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I'll go with Into the Spider-Verse is, as of right now, my favorite Spider-Man movie.
That's awesome.
How about for you?
For me, I have them sharing one and two. I can't. I don't know. I think I lean more towards Spider-Verse because, like you heard in the episode, I feel like it is the perfect comic book thrown on a screen and is exactly what you want. It's exactly what comic book lovers and readers have wanted for a long time, where we say so many times, well, not really me, but other people say so much that we can't get a good comic book movie because it's not exactly like a comic book would, you know, would feel. This is kind of exactly what a comic book would feel like if it was made into a movie, because it was.
Yeah.
And I think that's why it leans more towards the number one, because I think Sony, Marvel, whoever I think is more Sony, but with Marvel's help, they knew what they were doing. They knew where they wanted this to go and what they wanted the reader and the viewer, you know, to take from this movie. So I do lean more towards Spider-Verse, but I can't do it. I can't do it to my buddy Tom Holland. I just, So they're sharing one and two right now.
Fair enough. Fair enough.
And with more leniency to Spider-Verse.
Right. Like we said, we did just watch it. So there is that potential. Perfect. So for those that have seen it, definitely hit us up on social media. We want to know what you guys thought. You know, did you love the movie? Did you like the movie? Did you hate the movie? Where would it rank in your overall list of Spider-Man films, Spider-Man-based films, if you will?
Mm-hmm.
And are you looking forward to more movies after this one? What would be the next movie you would want to watch? If you're making a sequel or a spinoff, what's the first one you want to do?
From here?
Yeah.
Like from Spider-Verse? Any of these characters?
Any of these characters.
Well, obviously Peter Porker. No, in all seriousness, I would love to see Gwen Stacy's, you know,
more on, more
story,
in her
more from her.
Especially with some of the backstory that I gave you with like who her villains are.
Yes, yeah. I love that. It differs from, I guess, her story, though, in the comics. No?
No. You saw a shadowed image of one of her villains.
No, but I thought that she said Peter Parker, her best, dies.
Yeah, he is her best friend, and he dies. He was also one of her villains.
No, I knew that.
Yeah.
Oh, so she just didn't tell us how
he
died.
No, she doesn't tell.
Okay, well, then obviously I need Gwen Stacy's.
Yeah.
Obviously I need Gwen Stacy's story.
I really want
Spider-Man Noir?
No, more Miles Morales. I absolutely love it. Representation absolutely matters.
Mm-hmm.
I saw on Twitter there was a lady that had posted that her 9-year-old son never had any interest in comic books or comic book characters. They saw this movie. He went home and spray painted one of his other character masks. It looked like a Power Ranger mask to look like the Miles Morales, like black with the red eye rims, and made out of cardboard like a web slinger.
That's precious.
I was like, those are the type of things. And I use an African-American boy, but to have those, or he looks of African-American descent. I can't say exactly what his that ethnicity is.
Mm-hmm.
But I think that's where it matters. And I love the fact that Remy is interested in picking up these characters, mm-hmm. not because, you know, he knows their race or ethnicity or anything like that, but just these characters are interesting to him,
uh-huh.
and that he will grow up in a world that it doesn't matter what your race is, because you can, anybody can be a superhero.
Yeah.
And that's ultimately what I
want. And then to go with gender or, you know, whatever you are as well, because he keeps finding these Gwen Stacy figures and is like,
loves them.
I love Ghost Spider. He loves calling her Ghost Spider. I learned that before we learned it, because I don't know from where, maybe one of the shows. But he's over here telling us, I need Ghost Spider. And we're like, who are you talking about, Ken? That doesn't exist. No. Her name is Spider-Gwen, because that's what we knew her as.
I always knew her as Spider-Gwen.
Yeah. But he's telling us these things. And I love that he, like you said, can go to a store and pick any of these characters. And it doesn't matter if, you know, the character's, you know, nationality or gender, whatever have you, a kid is going to like what they like.
Yeah.
Because that's what captivates them.
Yeah.
So I think we're doing a good job in the film industry right now, animated and live action wise. So I think if we stick to this, whether you are on that politics in movies and that bugs you, I'm sorry for you. I'm not sorry. I guess I feel sorry for you.
Yeah.
But just get on board, man. It's fun to just enjoy things again.
Yeah. No, 100%. Perfect. So that's all we've got for this episode. We want to appreciate all of you guys for sticking around, and hopefully you'll go out and watch this movie and let us know what you thought. So obviously you can find us Hilt Radio on Twitter and Instagram, HYLT Radio, and you can also go to HiltRadio.com. Dima, where can they find you?
I'm at Citizen of Disney.
And I'm at Liam Bright. We will catch you next time right here on Hilt Radio. But as always, until then, try to make the world a better place.
Need even more Disney, Marvel, and Star Wars in your life? Be sure to visit our website at HiltRadio.com for more magic like our blogs, videos, merch, and access to our archive of episodes. That's HYLTRadio.com. See you real soon.